The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Susan Dellinger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Oprah Magazine, January 2019, Volume 20, Number 1. And this is the final installment of the January issue. And let's start off this installment with The World According to Gail. And there's a picture of Gail and Oprah being BFFs. Oprah's in a pink V-necked sweater, and Gail is wearing this maroon and sort of Carolina blue awning striped. Those are about 2-2.5-inch stripes, and they're horizontal. And the heading is Sail. Oprah and I often meet close friends who tell us, "This is my Oprah, this is my Gail," says Gail. So we thought, why not plan a BFF-themed cruise? On January 30th, we set sail with Holland America Line for our first ever girls' getaway to the Bahamas. Cruisers can enjoy an insightful conversation with Oprah, a meditation session at picturesque Half Moon Cay, and lots more. The three-day voyage won't be as long as our cross-country road trip. I'm still game to do another one. Oprah isn't, but it will be just as memorable. See you on the high seas. And in the upper left-hand corner, there's a picture of Lady Gaga, her hair pulled back, lots of eye makeup on. She's singing at a concert, and she's got this pink pleated tulle, just like ruffles on her wrists. Go is this heading. If you're like me, you've A, seen A Star Is Born more than once, and B, are hoping and praying Lady Gaga receives an Oscar nomination for her magical portrayal of struggling singer Allie. Until then, you can catch the Grammy winner at her two residencies at the Park MGM Resort in Las Vegas, starting December 28th. Enigma includes her pop hits, while jazz and piano highlight tunes from the Great American Songbook. Gaga's showing us her many talents, and I can't wait to see them all. Then under the heading Shop, last August, I posted a photo of our creative director, Adam Glassman, in a hoodie that read, "Black Don't Crack," and Instagram had a lot to say about it. But the apparel line's founder, Deborah Hubbard, said a white man could wear it because her brand is about being inclusive and sparking dialogue. And I love the slogan because I know it's 100% true. From $40, that would be the items, at blackdon'tcrack.com. And there's a picture of a model here wearing a black tank top that has the letters "Black Don't Crack" on them, with actually kind of a crack going through it. Under the heading Drink, I used to get my hands on fancy juices by ordering them online and picking them up from a parking lot in Greenwich, Connecticut. But now I can scan what seems like a whole grocery's worth of options here in the Hearst cafeteria, which is where I discovered Living Juice. The low-calorie, cold-pressed drink comes in fun flavors. My favorite is a blend of lemon, apple, and ginger, and has no added sugar or water. A good-for-you beverage that treats your body and taste buds well. I'll drink to that. $42 for six. DrinkLivingJuice.com. And finally, under the heading Stream, Springsteen on Broadway was one of the best performances I've ever seen. I left the theater in awe of Bruce's music and ability to connect with all kinds of people. After 236 sold-out performances, the show has come to a close. But if you missed it live, don't worry. The Netflix special debuts December 15th, so you can get up close and personal with the boss's stories and songs from the comfort of your couch. And now let's check out the gratitude meter. Five things we're smiling about this month, from awe to awesome. And the very first one is Buddy System. Senioritis, not at Seattle's Providence, Mount St. Vincent Assisted Living Facility. Its Intergenerational Child Care Center brings residents together with 106 kids age 5 and younger 5 days a week for activities both playful, sing-alongs, and physical, dance class, and completely heartstring pulling. And the second item is Wild Things. The big cat is out of the bag. Sir David Attenborough of Planet Earth fame is back with a new BBC America docuseries, Dynasties, starting January 19th, which follows 5 endangered species: lions, tigers, chimps, penguins, and African wild dogs, as they defend their corners of the animal kingdom. Coming in halfway between awe and awesome, It's a Sign. Vince Rosmarek is a stand-up guy. In April 2013, the Colorado resident started posting witty one-liners on his town's community center sign to entertain passing drivers. 5+ years later, he's sharing his weekly jokes at facebook.com/IndianHillsCommunitySign, so you can chuckle along wherever you are. They have a picture of one of the signs, and it reads, "Maybe broccoli doesn't like you either." Now, the fourth item is dining Sandin. A corner table, a bottle of bubbly, and ear-splitting music to holler over? The free SoundPrint app takes user-submitted decibel measurements to grade restaurants and bars by noise level, allowing you to pick a place where you can whisper rather than shout sweet nothings to your date. And number 5, coming in at awesome, wall art. Since 2007, artist Jan Vorman has traveled the globe mending crumbling walls with Lego bricks and other plastic blocks. Now his construction project is a worldwide art challenge that encourages would-be patchers to create bright spots in their neighborhoods. Check out Little Fixer Uppers at dispatchwork.info. And there's a picture of a stone wall that has been filled in the corner with Lego blocks with a few little Lego windows and doors in it as well. And now, across the bottom of this page, under O-Libs, we have Titus Burgess, the sassy star of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, returning for the final season January 25th. Fills in a few fun blanks, and there are 5 of them here. So Titus's most prized possession is, he says, my cast iron skillet. Growing up in the country, that's country with a K, if you will, we prepared many meals with it. You can bake in it, fry in it, make gumbo in it. Mine is heavy as hell, but man, does it produce wonderful dishes. The first thing I do in the morning is play with my 2 dogs. If I were waking myself up, I'd do things differently, but Micah and Hans are the loves of my life. After I tend to their routine, I stare at the ceiling in utter disbelief that I'm awake. Most people don't know that I can play piano. I learned on my grandmother's, which was dilapidated and missing keys, so I had a bizarre sort of ear training. But I could tell early on what the next notes should sound like, and that helped me wrap my head around music theory and such when I started formal training. When I need a pick-me-up, I turn to Carol Burnett. Thank God for YouTube, because watching reruns of her show over and over again can snap me out of my funk. And finally, when I want to escape, I make room for alone time. I'm a Pisces, which means I absorb people's energy to a fault. Maybe that's why I excel at acting. But in real life, it's something I can't turn off, which is why I don't like crowds. Mostly, I just like to be by myself because I feel everything, honey. And still in the Live Your Best Life section of the magazine, my best life is Kacey Musgraves, the Grammy-winning country star whose Oh What a World Tour's North American leg kicks off in Indianapolis January 9th, pays tribute and pairs down. And she's got this cute ponytail, and she's holding a guitar, and she's wearing a silk ivory-colored jacket that has insects embroidered on it in shades of green and lavender. And it's got this green, sort of Christmassy green, fake fur collar. Best guilty pleasure for Casey? I would get massages every day of my life if I could. I live in Nashville, and there's a place that charges $1 per minute. The employees always talk me into going longer. 5 minutes more on your hands? I'll agree to that. Best stress reliever, being with my horse. We have the same hair color, so I named him Mismo, which is Spanish for same. And my apologies if I mispronounced that. I don't get to see him as often as I'd like, but when I do, there are no surprises. Mismo is a very solid guy. Casey's best hidden talent, my knack for organizing. When I was a kid, I'd stay up really late decluttering our house. My dad would go, "Dude, you need to go to bed. It's 3:30 a.m. So if I weren't making music, I'd probably have a business where I organize other people's stuff. Casey's best collection, flashy sunglasses. My most recent addition is a pair of gold and pink Guccis that Elton John gave me. I wore them all the time until I realized I wasn't responsible enough to take care of them. Now they're safe in my closet. Casey's best dream collaboration, Selena. She was amazing at blending traditional Mexican music with the sounds of her time. For my fifth grade talent show, I asked my school's ESL teacher to help me learn her song, Como La Flor, and you best believe I won. And finally, Casey's best piece of advice. Not every pebble is a boulder. It's a good reminder because I can easily sweat the small stuff. Okay, and we have one more up-and-coming celebrity to talk about in the Live Your Best Life section of the magazine, and this is under the heading Take Note, and it is titled Say Her Name. Kiki Layne dazzles in the new drama If Beale Street Could Talk, December 25th, an adaptation of the 1974 James Baldwin novel. We asked the 27-year-old On the Rise actor about her stirring film debut. Oprah. This is the O staff. James Baldwin's book, which follows your character, a pregnant teen named Tish, as she scrambles to prove her fiancé is innocent of a crime he's been accused of, came out more than 40 years ago. Why tell this story now? Kiki. Because it tackles topics like our justice system and the incarceration of black men, problems that are still part of our world. But at its core, it's a love story. The novel speaks to the power of letting people in, of letting someone hold you when you need to be held. That gives you the strength to keep pressing against injustice. Question. You've acted for TV before, but not film. How did you land smack dab in an incredibly buzzy project? Kiki. A friend auditioning for the movie asked me to read lines with him, and as we worked on it, I thought, wait, I should go for this. So I submitted a tape. 2 weeks later, I was in New York doing a chemistry read with Stephen James, who'd been cast as Tish's fiancé, Fonny. I was freaking out, but our director, Barry Jenkins, made it comfortable for us to play and make discoveries. Question. This film feels like it's under a microscope because it's both Jenkins' first post-Moonlight project and the first Baldwin book brought to the big screen in the U.S. No pressure, right? Kiki. I definitely felt some pressure. Thankfully, I had people around, like Regina King, who plays my mom in the film, reminding me that if I wasn't supposed to be there, I wouldn't be. Question. Everyone from Barack Obama to Janelle Monáe has praised Baldwin's work. Did you know a ton about him before this film? Kiki. I was aware of Baldwin's impact and what he represented, especially in the black community, but now his work is personal to me. This was actually the first time I sat down and read one of his novels. And the final question. And then you loaded up your Amazon cart with every even more Baldwin? Kiki, oh yeah, Giovanni's Room, Another Country, The Fire Next Time. I've read a lot more now. On a sidebar, we have some creature comforts. We have three items here to consider ordering for your kitty cat. It's called Peak Cheek. Fish gotta swim, birds gotta fly, and cats gotta climb unbelievably high. The first one is a disc, and it's probably about 18 inches, and it sits in front of a shelf that mounts to the wall, and they show a black cat sitting on it, but all you can really see is the cat's head. This one is a dark green. It's been covered in a heavy felt. So let's read about this one. Modern Love. Minimalist sculptures or perfect cat posts. Dote in London designs, wall-mounted platforms, curves, and private nooks that increase a kitten's options for leaping and lounging without encroaching on your space. The pieces are wrapped in recycled felt, meaning they're made with feverish scratching in mind. Go to dote.co. Now, the next one is probably about a 5-inch diameter peg that's been covered in rope, and it's just deep enough that a cat can comfortably sit on it or wrap around it. A matter of course, if you build it, they will purr. Michigan-based Catastrophic Creations makes steps, planks, ladders, hammocks, and more, sold individually or in sets, that can be assembled to create wall-mounted obstacle courses straight out of Indiana Jones. CatastrophicCreations.com. And next we have a post with paddles. It's all blonde wood, and paddles can be put in through sort of these mounting holes up and down the posts. And there's a kitty cat sitting on one of these shelves, and there are about a half a dozen shelves, and a couple of the shelves actually have food bowls mounted in them. The High Life. The Tower from North Carolina company Contempo Cat is a multi-platform paradise complete with 5 small steps, 2 platforms large enough for a full stretch, and 2 holes for food containers. And because the up to 120-inch vertical palace is a floor-to-ceiling tension pole, it will stand tall without nails or screws. ContempoCat.com. Next, in Live Your Best Life, under the Connections heading, we have the title, What Nancy Knew. A young Tara Eisen viewed an advice book and its previous owner as an object of mockery. These days, she sees something more familiar in its pages. I have a dear friend named Nancy, writes Tara. I think she's around my age. I don't know where she lives, what she does for a living, or if she even has a job. I don't know if she's married or has children, or if she met the goals she set for herself. I don't know if she's happy. I hope she is. I think of her often. 30 years ago, I found a copy of The Total Woman by Maribel Morgan at a used bookstore. A recent college grad, I'd heard of the book in a women's studies course. Published in 1973, it was Morgan's anti-feminist rebuke to Ms. Magazine and women's liberation. It became a national phenomenon. Total woman classes sprang up across the country so wives could coach one another to happiness and fulfillment. Inside the book was an inscription, Nancy Nichols, August 25th, 1975, and in parentheses, to improve. Tucked inside were 2 pages of Nancy's notes to self on steno paper. I chuckled at her goal to have, quote, a beautiful 2-story house and wonder garden with a pool, end of quote. I rolled my eyes at her dreams to, quote, have my husband happy and successful and money in the bank, end of quote. I bought The Total Woman for $2, eager for a good laugh. Morgan urged women to become submissive helpmates to their husbands, to adopt the 4 A's. Accept him, admire him, adapt to him, appreciate him, and greet him at the door in lingerie. An acolyte one-upped Morgan by wrapping her naked body in saran wrap, a trend that took off. You'll recall Kathy Bates rocking the look in 1991's Fried Green Tomatoes. After all, Morgan wrote, marital sex is as clean and pure as cottage cheese, ordained by God. As Morgan saw it, a woman's path to happiness lay in suppressing any ambitions beyond the domestic. I was proud my, quote, total womanhood, end of quote, was a better sort. I put the book on a shelf and went about my liberated life. Recently, I reopened it. I'd all but forgotten about Nancy's notes, still tucked inside, and in reading them again, I was surprised by a sense of recognition. I should exercise more, too. Stop spending so much money and clean out the closet. This weekend, really. I wondered whether she ever tried that lingerie greeting, hoping to be, quote, loved by my husband very much, end of quote, before remembering all the erotic tricks I've deployed over the years. Bedside candles to create a flattering glow, savage loofahing for satiny skin. I imagined Nancy studying Morgan's pronouncement that, quote, it is only when a woman surrenders her life to her husband, reveres and worships him, and is willing to serve him that she becomes really beautiful to him, end of quote, and admonishing herself, quote, to care more about my appearance, A, hair, B, nails, C, figure, exclamation point, and in parentheses, lose weight, end of quote. I pictured her on some faddish diet of grapefruit and air, squeezing into a rubbery girdle, and thought of the hours I spend getting my hair highlighted, the desperate Spanx I wear beneath skinny jeans. I felt a pang when I reread her goal to stop being embarrassed of herself, because what woman does not live with perennial shame or chagrin over her imperfections? How was my dismissive attitude about Nancy's goals, her dreams, any less anti-feminist than Morgan's rigid rules? I had imposed on Nancy my own rules, believing just as ardently as Morgan that there was only one path. It's taken me several years, but here's what I know to be true. Accepting, admiring, appreciating, and adapting to one's partner to some degree are best practices for any relationship. We all hope to improve. I still try to do and be better. Wanting happiness isn't daffy. You can and should want whatever you want. I'll never meet Nancy. Still, I like to imagine us grabbing coffee. We joke about our mishaps with gel eyeliner or Pilates, and I'd ooh and ah at her Facebook posts of the family she hoped for, the life she hoped for. All of us hope for lives we may or may not get to live. Maybe I'd ask for advice. Maybe I'd just listen. Nancy and I made different choices, but how do you learn anything if you refuse to engage with difference? You don't. Nancy taught me that. Let's move now to the reading room. We have a sidebar here on the first page called Lost in Translation. Channeling the surrealist spirit of Banana Yoshimoto and Amy Bender, Yukiko Matoya's trippy debut story collection, The Lonesome Bodybuilder, alchemizes commonplace frustrations, a malfunctioning umbrella in a downpour, a tedious meeting, into marvelous allegories. In the titular tale, a woman gets home from work to find her husband more concerned with a boxing match on TV than her awful day. Feeling both ignored by him and aroused by the beautiful fighters, she starts working out, obsessively sculpting her muscles. Quote, I looked like a big inverted triangle on legs, end of quote, to gain his attention and luxuriate in herself. Weird and wonderful. And now let's look at 10 titles to pick up now. The first is The Dakota Winters by Tom Barbish. In this dishy novel set in the year before John Lennon's murder, Anton, fresh from the Peace Corps, returns home to the storied Dakota Building and forms a friendship with the doomed Beatle while trying to revive his father's talk show career. Cameos by Leonard Bernstein and Terry Bradshaw add to the wistful delights. The second title, Last Night in Nook, by Niviak Cornelsen. A rising star of Nordic lit portrays the agonies and ecstasies of a joined-at-the-hip group of young queer Greenlanders in a euphoric debut novel reminiscent of both Sheila Hetty's formal experimentation and Eileen Myles' punk poetry. The third title, Beyoncé in Formation, by Omiseek Tinsley. Lemonade is proving to be a modern Mona Lisa, a work of art ripe for both academic analysis and inner reflection. Modes Tinsley mixes and remixes in this lively, erudite memoir come cultural critique that uses Queen Bey's seminal album to examine her own life as a Black Southern femme. The fourth title, Why Religion, by Elaine Pagels. The National Book Award-winning scholar recounts the unthinkable, 15 months in which she lost both her husband and son, and then uses her knowledge of scripture and theology to parse her grief and find comfort. The fifth title, North of Dawn, by Nuruddin Farah. A Somali man raised in Norway embarks on a deadly jihadist mission. The political becomes personal in this beautifully affecting fictional tale of his Muslim parents who must leave their bewildered family through a maze of assimilation and religious conflict. The sixth title, in 10 titles to pick up now, is Evening in Paradise by Lucia Berlin. A Mexican bartender eavesdrops on movie stars filming The Night of the Iguana. A bereaved Parisian seeks solace from death as it relentlessly stalks her. These stories, as intoxicating as a shot of tequila, probe characters that shift as restlessly as the jungle breezes. The seventh title, Taking the Arrow Out of the Heart, by Alice Walker. From the author of The Color Purple comes a playfully subversive bilingual poetry collection calling out hawks and haters and encouraging self-love. Walker writes, quote, "Blackness is like the dark matter between stars and galaxies," end of quote. The eighth title, Why Women Have Better Sex Under Socialism, by Kristen R. Godsey. With acumen, and wit, chapters include what to expect when you're expecting exploitation. A professor lays bare the iniquities women face under capitalism and the desirability of decoupling, quote, love and intimacy from economic considerations, end of quote. The ninth title is Seduction by Karina Longworth. A film critic crafts an occurrent popular history of playboy predator Howard Hughes, reframed through the stories of the many women, Ginger Rogers and Katharine Hepburn among them, whose narratives and bodies he tried to control. And the tenth and final title, in 10 titles to pick up now, is My Sister, the Serial Killer, by Oyinkan Braithwaite. Coreed, a nurse in Lagos, rarely gets the chance to tend to her own headaches between calls from her sister, Aula, who's stabbed yet another boyfriend and needs help cleaning up the mess. Americana meets So I Married an Axe Murderer in a nimble, dark comedy that revisits the age-old question, is blood thicker than bleach? And now, let's read a longer review in the reading room. The review is entitled FaceTime, A Novelist's Startling Vision of the Present is a Cautionary Tale. The book that's being reviewed is Come With Me. At its core, Helen Schulman's ingenious sixth novel, Come With Me, is a contemporary family saga about hipster parents getting older in a world bent on proving their obsolescence. Amy had dreamed of becoming a movie mogul and was on the verge of accepting a job at MGM when her husband Dan landed a plum reporting gig in the Bay Area. She made a girl decision that his career came first. 15 years later, and now with three kids, Dan's an unemployed print journalist having an affair, while Amy swallows daily doses of humiliation, courtesy of her narcissistic boss, Donnie, a 21-year-old entrepreneur devising a multiverse startup in which users can relive decisions and experience how different choices might have played out. In that experiment, essentially weaponizing regret, Amy becomes Donnie's test pilot, time traveling her own what-ifs via VR technology tailored to exploit her personal history. Come With Me is not a work of science fiction, though it frequently feels like one. The novel is rife with tech allusions, from Ubuntu Linux to terms such as intrinsic SEO. IRL, in real life, is the phrase used by Amy and Dan's alpha male teenage son Jack for anything happening, not happening, on social media. It's hard to characterize which realm Jack's long-distance relationship with his girlfriend, Lily, falls into. The two have regular sex, and most nights Lily has a virtual seat at Jack's family's dinner table. Even Starbucks seems like a futuristically alien presence here, with its ever-proliferating locations and cryptic names for cups of coffee. It's jarring, then, in a measure of Schulman's inventiveness and skill, to be reminded that what we're reading isn't satire, it's our everyday. But by the end, when a tragedy rocks the family and there are no algorithms or apps that can make things better, it becomes clear that what Amy and Dan still have to offer, love, wisdom, safety, will never go the way of the dinosaurs. And here's another review, and this review is entitled Paper Trail. Susan Orlean sifts through the ashes of a literary mystery, and the book that's being reviewed is The Library Book. From her 1998 bestseller, The Orchid Thief, which probed the subculture of rare flower fanatics, to an outside article about Maui surfer girls that inspired the film Blue Crush, Susan Orlean has found rich material in remote corners. Her latest, The Library Book, is an investigation into a 1986 fire at the Los Angeles Central Library that consumed 400,000 volumes and damaged another 700,000. In addition to shedding light on what happened, Orlean's eighth book is a thrilling ode to an institution she's cherished since she was a kid. O contributor Hamilton Kane wondered what ignited the journalist's interest in a 32-year-old cold case. Hamilton asks, "You write that the memory of childhood trips to the library remains sacred to you. How so?" Susan, "The Shaker Heights, Ohio library might have been the first place I was given autonomy. Even at age 4 or 5, I could wander off on my own once inside. Then my mom and I would reunite at the circulation desk. I can still hear the chunk-chunk sound of the due date stamp. After we left, I loved being in the car with all the books we'd gotten piled on my lap, discussing what we'd taken out and in what order we'd read them." Hamilton, "Libraries today go beyond their original mission as booklenders and literacy champions. They now service the homeless, offer classes for non-English speakers, provide after-school care to kids, host movie screenings, and much else, as you found. Some have people lining up for hours before opening time, waiting to get in." Susan, "Yes, and they keep evolving as town squares where diverse communities can share and access information. John Szabo, the current head of Central, views libraries as the people's university. apolitical spaces where no one is being judged. Simply being in a library gives us the sense that we have access to all the knowledge in the world. Looking for information there is so different from surfing the internet, which can feel untethered and chaotic. Libraries are busy places, but soothing too. Hamilton. Card catalog entries begin each of the book's chapters. What gave you the idea for that? Susan. I love searching card catalogs. There's nothing you can't find in them. I wanted to offer a nod to the Dewey Decimal System and use them as mini previews of the stories to follow. Hamilton. You use index cards in the research and writing of your books, spreading them out in your office and putting one nut, as in nuts and bolts, on each card to keep them in place. How did that come about? Susan. Years ago, I heard John McPhee did something similar, and that was enough to send me to Staples for a ream of 5x8s. It turns out that's the perfect size for one nugget of information or thought or short description. Making notes on them allows me to see the way I'll build the book. I depend entirely on that system now to manage what goes into my nonfiction. But one day my dog knocked over all my little stacks. I'd arranged them on the floor. So for my last three books, I've used the same stash of hardware store nuts as paperweights to guard against wayward pets or rogue breezes. And the last question from Hamilton. Only one suspect was under serious investigation for the crime at the heart of this book. Harry Peake, a blonde, handsome, gay drifter who yearned to be a star. Peake changed his story many times, and no forensics linked him to the scene. He's been dead for 25 years, and still no one knows whether he was the arsonist or whether there even was one. Susan, every time I thought I had cracked the case, something poked a hole in my theory. I finally accepted the ambiguity. It remains a story without an ending. But still, Harry is an archetypal character in so many ways. He was a yarn spinner. His sister called him the best bullshitter ever. He was a dreamer. And he was in the first wave of people infected with AIDS. I became kind of fixated on figuring him out, but never really did. And that's one last question. Is there a favorite factoid about libraries you uncovered in your research? Susan, there are more libraries than McDonald's. And now, let's read advice from Martha Back. This is part one of a series called Seeking Thinner Peace. For Jessica Pell, emotional eating has been a long-time burden. She's hoping O-Life coach Martha Back can put her on the path to a lighter body and a brighter spirit. Since she was a little girl, Jessica Pell has equated food with comfort. The 47-year-old says, quote, "When my mom had parties, I'd steal cookies from the serving platter and sneak them back to my room," end of quote. It's also been a source of grief. As a teenager and young adult, Jessica was always fighting her weight. After graduate school, when she became an assistant media planner in New York City, she began losing the battle as the number on the scale crept ever upward. At age 38, Jessica rallied with a diet and exercise regimen, and she lost 150 pounds over the next 2 years. But despite her delight that she could finally zip up size 8 jeans, she missed the familiar solace of eating, so she turned to drinking, a plan that was unsustainable, to say the least. She got sober 5 years ago, but since then, she's regained a significant amount of what she'd lost. And though she's tried multiple weight loss plans, nothing sticks. She says, quote, "Focusing on just diet and exercise is clearly not working. It's time to consider my situation from an internal perspective instead of obsessing about numbers," end of quote. Fortunately, self-knowledge is life coach Martha Beck's stock in trade. Let's listen in on their first session. Martha Beck, "Hi, Jessica. I'm really glad we're working together. Tell me what's going on." Jessica, Thanks for talking with me. So my main issue now is weight. It's been the bane of my existence. My parents also struggled with it when they were growing up. It's a family inheritance. When I feel anxious, I tend to run for the food. Martha, it's your drug of choice. Addiction is a sign that a person is divided from her truth. You have feelings that are uncomfortable, and food lets you stay numb and block them out. Jessica, yes, but it doesn't seem to work as well as it used to. I'm a binge eater, always with the TV on, but now I'm realizing I need more stimulation to tune out. I'll also have my laptop open. I'll be checking my phone. Martha, the food isn't working as well because your psyche is trying to outstrip your attempts to numb yourself. One addiction specialist I know says it's like you're standing on a nail and you have to keep taking more morphine so you don't feel the pain. But morphine's not the solution. The solution is getting the nail out of your foot. Your pain is trying to lead you to recognize the root cause. Jessica, no disrespect to anyone who is alcoholic, but for me, quitting drinking was much easier than dealing with my food issues. You can't just stop eating. The fact that I lost so much weight before makes it even worse. People say, you've done it once, you can do it again. But I'm thinking, you have no idea what I had to do to get there. No one knew about my drinking until I took a bad fall and admitted I had to get sober. Martha, what about your parents? Do they still struggle with their weight? Jessica, they're very disciplined and fit. When I was growing up, they were always on diets. My dad constantly exercises, and my mom never, ever snacks. We're all fixated on food, but in different ways. Martha, are they emotional people? Jessica, my dad has a temper. When I was growing up, he'd get upset about my weight, and then it really came out. My mother is more measured. She doesn't like conflict. If I bring up something hurtful from the past, she just says, I'm sorry you feel that way. One overreacts and one underreacts. There's no middle ground. Martha, you were never shown a healthy way to deal with sadness or anger. I think binge eating is often an act of rage. You're stuffing down difficult emotions. Jessica, sometimes I'm afraid of how angry I could get if I let myself. Martha, what angers you most? Jessica, the fact that I've wasted so much time focusing on numbers on a scale. I'm so fortunate. I have wonderful friends and a nice life, but weight has taken up a lot of space in my brain, and I really regret it. Martha, that's the nail in the foot. There's nothing like living in the past or the future to throw you into suffering. Your family's food obsession has brought you anger, loss, grief. You don't know how to process those emotions, so you eat. It's a circular pattern. But even though that pattern's deeply ingrained, you can change it. By stepping back to observe it and consciously replacing it with a new pattern, then everything else in your life will start to shift. When you're anxious or angry, instead of your brain going to food, we want it to go to the experience of compassion. Let's try a little exercise called the Wild Child and the Dictator. In your right hand, imagine a version of yourself that's 2 inches tall. She's a tiny despot, holding a whip and yelling, "You stupid idiot, stop eating!" Can you hear her? Jessica, yes. Martha, in your left hand, imagine another tiny version of yourself. She's a proverbial child. She's old enough to talk, but doesn't know how because she's been raised by wolves. She knows nothing about weight or anger. All she knows is that she can comfort herself with food. Picture that wild child, dressed in rags, filthy, being screamed at. Can you see her? Jessica, I can. Martha, she doesn't understand a thing the dictator is screaming. The only thing she knows how to do is eat until she feels better. The dictator's in charge when you're feeling strong, but the wild child is stronger. If she feels the urge to binge, nothing's going to stop her. Can you see her? Jessica, yes, but I can see the dictator more clearly. Martha, almost everyone can. We're aligned with our dictator selves because that's what our culture teaches us to do. But the wild child will win because she is your amygdala, a part of you that evolved before there was speech. So the dictator screaming and the wild child's cowering and trying to placate the dictator. But when she can't, she eats. Can you see this? Jessica, too well. Martha. Then the dictator screams more loudly and the wild child gets more desperate. I want you to notice how tired they are. Look at the wild child, who's been screamed at for almost all of your life. Isn't she sick of that? Jessica, definitely. Martha, can you see that the dictator is tired of trying to control the binges? Jessica, she's at her wit's end. Martha, can you see that neither of them means any harm? The dictator's trying to save you from yourself, and the wild child's trying to feel better. They're both innocent. Jessica, it's harder for me to see the dictator as innocent, but I do think she wants the best for me, like a parent. Martha, she doesn't want to spend her life screaming. She wants you to be well so she can go off duty. I'd like you to offer these two beings a loving kindness meditation. Look at them and say in your mind, may you be well, may you be happy, may you be free from suffering. Can you try that before our next session? Jessica, I think so. Martha, do it as often as you can, and when you wish that the two of them could be happy and well, ask yourself, who am I at this moment? You're not the dictator. You're not the wild child. You're watching them both and offering kindness. Start from there, from knowing that there's a part of you that's outside. When you binge, watch yourself do it. By becoming the watcher, you stop the pattern. It's hard at first, but the more you do it, the stronger you'll get. It's like lifting weights. I want you to say to both parts of yourself, even in the middle of a binge, may you be well. May you be happy. May you be free from suffering. Write down those words and say them out loud as often as possible. Can you do that? Jessica, I'll try. Martha, amazing. Let's check back in a few weeks. Let's move now to the Feeling Good section of the magazine, and let's read this article called Flu 411, Setting the Record Straight on the Season's Most Misunderstood Vaccine. Have you gotten your flu shot this year? The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, recommends that everyone age 6 months and older be vaccinated annually for influenza. Yet last season, only 37% of American adults heeded that advice. While a small number may pass on the shot because of a legitimate risk of allergic reaction, many more skip out for reasons that aren't based in fact. We asked experts to clear up some of the most popular flu falsehoods, and there are five of them. The first one is, the flu shot can make you sick. Just like the flu itself, this pernicious claim returns year after year. Mark Thompson, Ph.D., acting deputy chief of the Epidemiology and Prevention Branch of the CDC's Influenza Division, says, quote, I've even had this conversation with my own parents, end of quote. Here's what Thompson tells them and us. There are no live viruses in the flu shot, which means they can't reproduce and infect you. It's impossible for the flu vaccine to give you the flu. As with most vaccines, soreness, redness, or swelling may occur at the injection site, and some people may briefly develop aches or a low-grade fever. But these mild symptoms are evidence that the vaccine is stimulating your immune response, says L.J. Tan, Ph.D., Chief Strategy Officer of the Immunization Action Coalition, saying, quote, it's how you know it's working, end of quote. And here's another falsehood. I take great care of myself, so I don't need a vaccine. Eating well, exercising, and getting enough sleep won't guarantee immunity. In fact, a recent study co-authored by Thompson found that influenza patients admitted to hospital ICUs were less likely to have underlying medical conditions and more likely to rate their health as very good or excellent. Thompson says, quote, there aren't a lot of diseases that can take otherwise healthy adults and put them on a ventilator. This is one of them, end of quote. And it's worth noting that getting vaccinated isn't just about you. It helps protect the most vulnerable, newborns, older adults, those with chronic health conditions. The more people who are vaccinated, the harder it is for the disease to spread. Now, the third falsehood, the flu shot doesn't even work that well. It's true that during the 2017-18 flu season, the vaccine was only 40% effective, the CDC estimates. Each year, public health officials must predict which three or four viruses are most likely to circulate during the upcoming flu months in order to make up the vaccine. And sometimes their combo doesn't match well with the prevalent strains. But the vaccine is still the best way to protect your health. As Tan notes, quote, it's 0% effective if you don't get it, end of quote. And the fourth of five falsehoods, I had the flu and I was fine. You got lucky. While some people develop symptoms similar to a cold with a fever, others can face severe chest discomfort, body aches, and knockdown fatigue. The illness can also lead to potentially life-threatening complications, including pneumonia, sepsis, and inflammation of the heart, brain, and muscles. People with chronic conditions like asthma, heart disease, and diabetes, pregnant women, and anyone older than 65 or younger than 5 are especially vulnerable to complications. The good news? If you still manage to contract the virus after getting the vaccine, your symptoms will likely be much less severe. Thompson's study found that being vaccinated for the flu reduced the risk of landing in an ICU by 82%. And the fifth and final falsehood. I didn't get vaccinated in the fall. Now it's too late. Flu season can stretch to May, with peaks as late as February and March, so you can still benefit. Just keep in mind, the protection needs about 2 weeks to take effect, so don't wait until another day. In the Refresh Mind, Body, and Soul section of Feeling Good, we have the headline, Happier New Year. After the holiday whirl of fun, friends, and non-stop baked goods, going back to your same old can be a bummer. To head off what feels like the world's biggest case of the Mondays, resist the urge to spend every last minute of your time off socializing. Instead, Alicia Clark, psychologist and author of Hack Your Anxiety, recommends carving out at least one transition day at the end of the hoopla. You'll be energized and less frazzled when you return to your routine. And if there's something causing specific back to reality dread, try turning your anxiousness into action. Is your job giving you the blues? Set aside time to work on your resume. Are you feeling the post-holiday financial pinch? Put together a 12-month budget so you won't be in the same funk this time next year. Having a plan will make you feel less helpless and more hopeful. Think of it as a belated gift to yourself. Under the heading They Deliver, eat better and skip a trip to the supermarket with one of these mail-order food services. Green Chef is the first of the three. Who it's for? The wannabe foodie. How it works. If you aspire to cook more but need a hand in the kitchen, Green Chef delivers pre-prepped ingredients and recipes for creative entrees like sesame-crusted salmon. The dishes take about 30 minutes, and you can choose your plan based on dietary preferences, including omnivore, gluten-free, vegetarian, and vegan. What it costs? $72 to $78 for three two-serving meals. Go to greenchef.com. The next one is Hungry Root, who it's for, the low-commitment cook. How it works. People short on time and patience but still craving colorful, veggie-heavy meals can receive all the pre-measured ingredients needed to make quick, under 10 minutes, meat-free meals like zucchini pasta lentil salad or kale cauliflower burrito bowls, plus sides, hello, cheesy carrot chips, and sweets, as in black bean brownie batter that's undetectably nutritious. what it costs. $69 for four, two-serving meals plus two sides, snacks, or sweets. Go to hungryroot.com. And the third and final one, Thrive Market. Who it's for, the health-minded home chef. How it works. This online, membership-based health food store offers tons of staples, from sustainable seafood to natural nut butters to whole grain flours and pastas, at wholesale prices. Shipping is free over $49, and for every membership purchased, Thrive provides one to a low-income family. What it costs, $60 per year, ThriveMarket.com. And here's a tip, undress for success. Try this stripped-down Finnish relaxation practice. In Finland, sipping Merlot in your underwear isn't slothfulness. It's a mental health exercise. Seriously. Kaushurakani, a.k.a. Ponstrunk, is a Finnish slang for getting tipsy in your skivvies or just spending, quote, a cozy evening at home with something enjoyable to eat and drink, end of quote, says Miska Rantanen, author of the book Ponstrunk. The pastime is so widespread that Finland's Ministry of Foreign Affairs included tiny tippling people in an emoji collection representing Finnish culture. Rantanen says, quote, it's not about getting drunk. It's about taking the pressure off and making time just for yourself, end of quote. Here, two of his tips for adopting the mellow mindset, martinis and bikinis optional. Claim your space. Since Ponstrunk is a solo pursuit, plan ahead and tell your partner or kids they'll need an hour or two, that you will need an hour or two of alone time. And then take it easy. Think of Ponstrunk as the opposite of a New Year's resolution. Rather than setting lofty goals, you're accepting yourself as you are, which can inspire lasting change. When you don't feel judged, you can make choices from a place of self-care versus self-punishment, says Rantanen. Think, quote, I'm more energetic when I eat fewer sweets, end of quote, instead of, quote, I shouldn't be eating sugar, end of quote. Who knew sitting on your couch could be so good for you? And under the heading Class Apps, can't or don't want to sweat with strangers? Here's an audio-based app to turn your phone into a cheaper cardio class. The app is called Studio. Access unlimited running or strength classes taught by top instructors and set to pump you up playlists. Customize sessions by time, endurance or intervals, music genre or more. It's $15 a month or $99 for a one-year subscription. And it's a universal level. So now we run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Susan Dellinger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at the website triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.